All right, so we're beginning the second perek, Chof Beis Amud Aleph. The subject of this perek is the piyosos, the four lotteries that they had every day in this mikdash to determine which kohen does which avoda. Now the question is, did that take place on Yom Kippur? So we've touched on before, so now we'll talk about it in more detail. There's a machlokas rishonim on that topic. The Baal HaMor writes that so you have like this. Before the Baal HaMor, there were the various authors of piyutim that we say for the avoid on Yom Kippur. We have an on machzer, the one that begins atakananta, which actually doesn't mention the piyosis at all on Yom Kippur. But you have there's an Ashkenazic one that begins with the words amitz koyach that does, and you have various other ones that also do. So the Baal HaMor writes, he says, all of them are making a mistake. There's no piyosis on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol had to do all the avoda. So he says, what is this perek doing over here? He says, because the first one it talks about is Trumas HaDeshen. And at the end of the previous perek, we talked about the schedule of Trumas HaDeshen, how on regular days it was at Kreis HaGever, when the rooster crows, or when the person makes the announcements, according to Rav versus Reb Shila. And then we said on Yom Kippur it was earlier. So having mentioned Trumas HaDeshen, so it goes on to talk about Trumas HaDeshen and the other piyosis. So says the Baal HaMor. The Ramban disagrees. He says, fact of the matter is, you're going to have a whole perek over here that's just Agav Grora, that's just incidentally because of a mention of Trumas HaDeshen in the previous Mishnah. If there were none of these piyosis on Yom Kippur, then this perek would belong in Masechta Talmud or something like that. It doesn't belong over here. So he says, as a matter of fact, we could say that there were all four piyosis on Yom Kippur because with each one of them, there are details of the avoda that the Kohen Gadol didn't have to do. The first one, for example, was to determine who does Trumas HaDeshen. So as we learned at the end of the previous perek, not everybody agrees the Kohen Gadol had to do Trumas HaDeshen, seeing as how it's a nighttime avoda. Maybe the Kohen Gadol only has to do the avoda beginning in the morning. So they would have to have at least the first pious. And then the Ramban goes on to say the second pious, you have a whole bunch of things, and most of them, it's true, are done by the Kohen Gadol. But one, among the ones that are picked during the second pious are who's going to clean off the Mizbeach HaZahav from the ashes and the Brunt Ketores from yesterday, and who's going to clean out the menorah. Again, those aren't necessarily things that the Kohen Gadol had to do. So therefore, they could have a pious for those two things. The third pious, we're going to learn later on in the perek, was who's going to bring the Ketores. Now, we're not talking about the Ketores and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That there's nothing to talk about. We're talking about the regular daily Ketores on the Mizbeach HaZahav. Fine, it's true that the Kohen Gadol does, but you also have somebody has to bring in the pan full of coals from the Mizbeach that's going to be used to burn that Ketores. That says that Ramban, the Kohen Gadol didn't necessarily have to bring those coals in. Usually the way it would work throughout the rest of the year is one Kohen would win the right to do the Ketores, and the Kohen next to him would get to bring in the pan full of coals. Fine, on Yom Kippur, since the Kohen Gadol is doing the Ketores, they'd still have to do a pious to determine who's going to do the pan with the coals. And the same thing with the fourth one. So according to the Ramban, all four piyosis took place on Yom Kippur. So therefore, he says that's what this perek is doing over here, because it describes something that took place on Yom Kippur as well. And then there are various other possibilities. The Tosfos Yom Tov learns in the Rambam that the Rambam says there were piyosis, but the Tosfos Yom Tov learns that maybe according to the Rambam there were only two of them on Yom Kippur, only the first and second. And then the Ritva has a shita, which he also brings in the name of the Ramban, that maybe only the avodas that are special to Yom Kippur, was it absolutely necessary that the Kohen Gadol does it, and if somebody else does it, it would be possible, as opposed to the other things, like, for example, shechting the Korban Tamid, let's say, yes, the Kohen Gadol should do them, but if he didn't, it doesn't pass all the avodas. So let's say the Kohen Gadol is weak, then they might have to make piyosis in order to determine who does those avodas. So those are the various major shittas among the Rishonim about the story, about the piyosis on Yom Kippur.
What are the piyosis exactly?
Piyosis are, so we're going to see later in the Mishnah, we're going to see they are a form of a lottery by which we determine which kohen is going to do which avodah. We're going to see the description of it later in the Mishnah, and then we're going to expand on it in the Gemara. So let's start. The Mishnah says, Barishayna, originally, Kol Mi Sheroitza Litrumas HaMizbeach Turim. Any Kohen who wanted to do Trumas HaDeshen, which is where he goes up to the Mizbeach and takes one panful of ashes and puts them down on the ground next to the Mizbeach, originally the rule was there was no pious for it. Any Kohen who wants to do that can do that. Because, as the Gemara is going to say, originally the Chachamim figured it's not necessary to have a pious for it. There's not going to be very many people that are going to be interested in doing it. What if you did have more than one person who wanted to do Trumas HaDeshen? So then, Rotso, again, they still didn't have a regular pious for it. Rotsin Va'olin Bakevesh, they would run up the ramp of the Mizbeach. They'd have a foot race, in other words. Well, we'll see in the Gemara, actually, whether it means that they would actually race up the ramp or what it means exactly, but we'll see. Kol HaKodemus Chavere Ba'arba Amas Zohar. Whoever got ahead of the other one into the last, into the four Amos of the Kevesh, and we're going to see in the Gemara, that means the top four Amos, Zohar was the one who won the right to do Trumas HaDeshen. By the way, Tosfos Yeshanim points out, one second, since when you're allowed to run in the Beis Mikdash, since when you're allowed to run when you're doing the Avodah. So Tosfos Yeshanim says, maybe in fact it means that they would run with small steps. They would run Oka Vitzad Godol, a heel next to toe. So they're walking with small, walking with small steps, but they're doing it quickly, which amounts to running. Or they say another possibility is that, maybe since this isn't the Avodah yet, this is only preparing for the Avodah, maybe therefore they're allowed to. Okay, v'im hoyer shnei and shavin. What happens if even after that foot race you have two or more of them that are tied? So then, hamamuna oimelahen atzbiu. Then the mamuna, the one who is in charge of the piyosis throughout the day, would tell them, stick out your fingers. That everyone put out a finger, and we're going to count around the fingers. Now, does that mean that we have only those two? Does that mean that we have only those two join in the pious? So there are mafoshim who explain it that way. A difficulty with that is the way we're going to do the pious we're going to describe is that they pick a number and then they count until they reach that number. Now, if you only have two koyanim in it, isn't it going to be pretty obvious? If you pick an even number, it's going to be the second koyan. If you pick an odd number, it's going to be the first koyan. So most of the mafoshim explain that what it means is that they would have everybody. Once there was a tie over there, then not only those two are eligible, but so is everybody else. So are all the other kohenim of that day's base of, that are on duty and are awake, are able to join in. So they all stand in a circle and they do a pious. So they all stick out their fingers. So Rashi describes how it was done based on the Gemara later in the Perek, that they have everybody stand in a circle. The Mamuna takes the hat off one of the Kohenim to show that that's where we begin the pious, and then he starts counting the fingers as we go around. So he picks some large number. Rashi mentions, for example, let's say 100 or 60 or some other large number, more than the number of Kohenim that are there. The Rambam, by the way, has an interesting thing in the Rambam's Lashon in it. And Hilchos Tamid and Mosafim is that they do a number. Again, he says they do a number, whatever was picked. And he says, Hamispo Shmoinim Oimea Oelef. So does the word Shmoinim mean 80? So it means he's giving three examples, 80, 100, or 1,000. Or is the word supposed to be punctuated Shemoinim? And then it means the number that they're going to count, namely, for example, 100 or 1,000. It's an interesting thing that the Rambam used a Loshifin over there. That's depending what Nekudas you put on the word, you can understand them differently. Anyway, so then they go around the circle until they reach that number, and then that's where it stops, and the person who it landed on is the one who gets to do that avoda. Tosfos Yeshanim points out there seems to be a flaw in that. On the face of it, if the Mamuna is deciding which Kohen we start the count from and therefore which one we take the hat off of, and he also chooses the number, doesn't that make it possible for him to manipulate it? If there's a friend of his over there, then he can easily choose a number that he'll also start in a certain place and choose a certain number that he knows is going to land on a certain Kohen who's a friend of his over there. So he says, the Tosfos Yeshanim says, in fact, maybe they split up, maybe what it is they chose a number among themselves without the Mamuna being there. And then his job is just to count without knowing what number he's counting up to until they tell him stop. So therefore he can't manipulate the count. There's also the question, when we say we took off the hat from one of the Kohanim, do we leave it off the whole time, or do we put it back right afterwards because it would be a gnai for him to stand bareheaded the whole time? That's another machlokas. Anyway, okay. So that's what they do. So they put out their fingers, and the Mamorna Council counts the fingers. So that's the pious. So that's how they would do the pious, counting around the fingers until they reach the predetermined number. And how many fingers can they stick out? One or two. We'll see in the Gemara why there would be, we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem, why a person might stick out two fingers. The Ein Mitzina, good Rabbi Mikdash, they're not allowed to stick out their thumb in the Bis Mikdash, because, as the Gemara is going to explain, the thumb, being that it's so far away from the other fingers on the hand, and remember, the Kohanim are standing over there in the circle, it's quite crowded in the circle, you can easily have a person can stick out his thumb in a way that looks like somebody else's hand, nobody's going to realize it, and then he's going to be able to use it to manipulate the count. He sees, for example, that the count, let's say, is going to end up going to the person next to him, so he's going to stick out his thumb, making it look like it's the finger of the person next to him. They're going to count that, and then he says, "Hey, you picked my finger, so it's me." The Rambam puts it a little differently. The thumb, because it's again because it's far away from the other fingers, it's very easy to stick it out or put it back in without other people realizing, and therefore again he can use that to manipulate the count. So you can't use the thumb. You can use only other fingers, the index finger, the middle finger, whatever. Now, continues the Mishnah, mice, going back to that, so we said that before the pious, we said you'd have the foot race if there were two or more Kohanim, but mice show you Shneim Shavim. It happened once that two Kohanim were racing up the Kevesh and both of them were tied. They're running up the ramp of the Mizbeach and they're both tied. So one of them pushed the other one, like to push him out of the way, the Nuffel, and he fell off the ramp. He broke his leg. Remember, the top of the Kevesh is 9 amos off the ground. 9 amos is about 13 or 14 or 18 feet, depending how what you say the size of an amma is. So it's a considerable fall, and the floor of the Bais Mikdash is made out of marble. So the guy fell down and broke his leg. The Kivin Shiro based in Shabon the Desakana. So based in saw that it's coming to danger if we have this foot race. He's Skinu. So they made a Takana. Forget about the foot race and forget about whoever comes first is going to get it. They made a Takana. Shalom Yotom and Esam Esbech El Abapais. That when they're going to do the Trumas Adeshan also is going to be like the other Avoidus and is going to have the Pais. So it's not, we're not going to have the three level thing, the three step thing that we had before. Either if there's one person, then he gets to do it. Or if there's two people, then we have a foot race, and if there's many people, then we do a pious. No, to begin with, if you have more than one person who wants to do it, then we do a pious. So the Mishnah says, Arba piyosis ha-yusham. There were four piyosis that were done throughout the day in the Mishnah to determine who does what avoda. This one that we just described is the first pious of the day. We're going to see eventually in the Gemara why it is, and why did they just do all the piyosis one after the other? Why did they spread them out throughout the day? We'll see in the Gemara. Okay. There is, by the way, a sikha from Tavshin Mem Tes where it ever talks about a deeper idea why it is that they had a pious for each of the avodas, and including for this one. So in the Mishnah, we're saying because of practicalities, because originally they didn't, and then they realized that they're boyim l'desakana, that's coming to a dangerous situation, so therefore they had to make a pious. It ever talks at some length about the idea a pious is a form of a girdle, and a girdle is something min hashamayim. We know, for example, the girdle, there was a girdle to divide up Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim, and it was Al Pi Hashem to a lesser extent brought in Sfarim from the Rishonim, that a person who denies the validity of a girdle is like denying the validity of the Aseres HaDibros. That's how important it is. So therefore, a deeper idea of it is, because a girdle represents that you're putting the decision in Hashem's hands, and therefore it represents the Kabbalah's oil that you have to start the day's Avodah with. So therefore, they had Piyosis, they had these four Piyosis in order to inculcate in the Kohen in this idea of Kabbalah's oil, of accepting that Hashem is the one who runs things. Okay. So the Gemara asks, V'homi ikra my time alo chakin alo rabbanon piyosa, why to begin with taka did the Chachamim not make a pious for Terumas Hadeshen? Why was the original thing just whoever wants to come and do it can do it, and only if we have two or more then we have a foot race, etc.? So the answer is, Me'ikra Sabur, originally the Chachamim figured, given the Avodah slightly, given that Trumas HaDeshet is an Avodah that takes place at night, so therefore it's not, so therefore, therefore the Kohenim are not going to consider it so important, Loi Chashivahu, they're not going to consider it so important, V'loi also, therefore the Kohenim aren't going to show up anyway, so therefore there's no need to make a pious. Given the Chazur, the Ka'asu, since they saw that yes, Kohenim do consider it just as important as any other Avodah, and they're coming, and now you have enough of them, but also the Desakana, that you come to the dangerous situation that we mentioned in the Mishnah, where one of them pushes the other, and makes him fall off and breaks his leg, takin alopiyasa, so then they set up, a pious for it. So the Gemara says, what are you're telling me that an avoider that takes place by night, the Koyanim don't care about, bahare evorim upidorim, what about burning the limbs and fats that are left over from the korban during the day? Avodah slightly, that's also an avodah that takes place by night. And the Chachamim set up a pious for it, because we're going to have later on in the parak, the fourth pious is to determine who gets to carry up the limbs of the korban tamid from the ramp of the mizbeach and throw them into the fire, and that also includes who's going to finish burning them at night. So they had a pious for that. So you see that even a nighttime, avodah is something that the Kohenim consider important. Okay, the answer is sof avodah di mami. Fine, you could argue that that's the beginning of that's the end of the avodah that took place during the day. The main avodah took place during the day. The Kohen was shechted and the blood was sprinkled, etc. during the day. So therefore, the Kohenim are likely to come and fight over the privilege of who's going to burn the Evarim, and therefore we make a pious for it. Whereas over here, this is the Trumas HaDeshen. It's not a continuation of an Avodah during the day. It's a new Avodah of its own. Therefore, to begin with, the Chachamim figure that the Kohenim are not likely to come and quarrel over it. So the question is, Hai nami tchilas avodah b'yamamahi? Nu, Trumas HaDeshen, fine. It's not the end of the previous day of the previous day's avodah, but it's the first avodah of the new day. So therefore, in other words, it should be considered it would be choviv, it would be precious and important to the Kohenim, because it's the first avodah of the new day, even though it actually takes place by night. And we know that the Omer Rabbi Yechanan, because we find that Rabbi Yechanan says, Kiddush Yodav L'Trumas HaDeshen, if a Kohen was Makadish his hands and feet for Trumas HaDeshen. Now, normally you have the rule like this. Normally, a Kohen was Makadish his hands and feet, usually the same way as Korbanos become possible with Lina, if they're left overnight, the same way the Kohen's Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim becomes possible overnight, even if he didn't fall asleep, he didn't go to the bathroom, he didn't anything, he still needs to do a new Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim in the morning. However, Rabbi Yechanan says that if he was up early during the night, the Kroys HaGever, or Ashmura HaRishoyna, or Chatzois, as we said at the end of the previous parak, the various times when Trumas HaDeshen would take place, so he did Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim for that. L'machar ain't Sarach L'Kaddish. Then in the morning, as long as he didn't go out of the Beis Mikdash or go to the bathroom or whatever, he doesn't need ain't Sarach L'Kaddish. He does not need to do Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim again. Shekvar Kiddush Mitchilas Avoida. Because he already did Kiddush at the beginning of the Avoida. So we see that the Trumas HaDeshen is called the beginning of the Avoida. So that being the case, even though it takes place by night, given that it's the beginning of the Avoida of the day, then we should assume to begin with that the Kohenim consider it important and are going to come and want to do it, and they're going to end up arguing over it, and therefore we need a pious. I should mention, by the way, I didn't mention in the mission, the word pious, the Mephoshim explain, comes from the word pius, which pius means appeasement. Because, like this, you have, for example, in the case of the Mishnah, they're running a foot race, so they're doing various other kinds of things. There can end up being arguments whether it was done fairly or whatever. The same thing also, Mephoshim say, the same way if we were to have everybody write their name on a slip of paper and put it in a hat, then there would be arguments you picked from the wrong side of the hat, or you didn't mix them up or whatever, whereas when you do like this kind of thing, counting fingers around, is completely fair, and everybody's appeased and everybody accepts that that's how it is, min hashamayim. So anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that Trumas HaDeshen is the beginning of the Avodah. So the answer is, Eimah Shekvar Kiddush Mitchila La Avodah. No, change the wording of what Rabbi Yochanan says a little bit to say that he's saying he doesn't need to do Trumas HaDeshen, because he already did Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim for an Avodah. But the fact is, it is an independent avoda, and it takes place by night, and therefore it's not the beginning of the avoda of the next day in that sense. It's an independent avoda that takes place by night, and therefore the theory was that the Kohanim are not going to be so interested in it and come in large numbers to require it, and therefore they didn't think to begin with they needed a pious. Ikadamri, another version is Miikra Sober, that originally the Chachamim figured, you know why people are not going to come for the Trumas Hadeshen, not because it's an avoda that takes place by night and they're figuring that an avoda during the night is less important. No, maybe we could stick with the actual wording that Rabbi Yochanan used, that Trumas Hadeshen is the beginning of the avoda of the day. But Miikra Sover, originally the Chachamim figured, Kibin de Ika Oines Shena, because after all, this Avoda takes place at night. Most people would like to be able to be sleeping at that time. It's hard for people to be up at that time. Loy also, so they figured people are not necessarily going to come. So therefore, we have one person, two people, then fine, we don't need a pious for that. Kibin de Chazu, to Osu, but eventually they saw that many Kohanim are coming to vie for the privilege of Trumas Hadeshen, but also the Dei Sakana, also Nami, the Dei Sakana, and they're coming to danger, like we said in the Mishnah, Takinim, Rabbanim Piyasa, so then they set up a pious for this one also. So not because the Kohanim are not going to consider it an important avoda, because it's at night, but partially because they want to sleep. The question is, again, what about a vorim updorim, which, again, people want to sleep, and we still see that there was a pious for it to begin with. Now, Tosfos says, I mean, look, you know, it's not like the vorim updorim have to be burnt by night. Conceivably, they could all be burnt by day. So what's the question? But the fact of the matter is, you do still have to be up at night in case there are, for example, in case you have, they're not completely burnt during the day, or in case, as we learned at the end of the previous parak, that pieces of the korban pop off the mizbeach and you have to put them back. So again, you have people have to be up at night at a time when they would rather be sleeping, and yet we see that people were vying for it. You needed a pious, so why should Trumas Hadeshen be any different? The answer is shiny migna mi mekam. It's different getting up early versus staying up late. To stay up late, that is easier for people to do. So once they're already awake, then fine, to stay up a couple of extra hours because of the Evarim Upgarim, that there's enough Kohanim that are going to be willing to do that, that therefore the Chachamim knew to begin with, we have to have a pious to determine who does that avoda, otherwise there's going to be fights and arguments. But when it comes to Trumas Hadeshen, which involves waking up very early, then it's less likely that people are going to be willing to wake up early in order to do that, and therefore, originally the Chachamim figured nobody's going to bother, and therefore they didn't see the need for a pious until they found that actually there is a need for it, after all. Okay. The Gemara asks, So you're telling me that the takana was a pious was only because of this problem that we had where one person pushed the other one off the kevesh? On the face of it, lahai gisa avoy, wasn't it because of other avoidas that go along with it? That's how Rashi explains the question. Tosfos and Shonim and many of the other Rishonim explain the question a little bit differently. That Rabbi Hanano also. What are you telling me? That they made the takana of a pious because there were too many people and they were getting into fights? Adrabba, don't we see that it seems that they made a pious on the contrary because there weren't enough people that wanted there weren't enough people until they added other avodas to go together with Trumas Hadeshen. So the Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Misha Zocha b'Trumas Hadeshen, whichever Kohen won the Trumas Hadeshen in the pious, Yizke b'Sidur HaMarocha, he also wins the right to do the avoda of setting up the wood pile on the Mizbeach, which they did every morning, or which you had at least two wood piles. We're going to have later on in the Masechta, we're going to have a three-way machlokas Tanoim, how many wood piles and how many fires there were on the Mizbeach every day, and then everybody agrees there was an extra one on Yom Kippur for the Kohen to take holes for the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Well, you have three different opinions, whether there were two or three or four wood piles on a mizbeach every day. So that the kohen who won Trumas Hadeshen gets the right to set that up, or those up, over Shnei Gzira Eitzim. And he also wins the right to take the two logs of wood, which is a special mitzvah after the wood pile is set up, that he should take two logs of wood and of a certain size, which we learned about that size in Shkalim, and put them on the and put them on the wood pile on the fire, like we say in Parshas Vayikra. Well, we in Parshas Vayikra, we nostem ben Aaron Akoyin eitzim al hamizbeach, but also in Parshas Tzav, in the part about Trumas Hadeshen that we say every day, uvir alei Akoyin eitzim baberka baberka. The Akoyin should burn wood on it every morning. Eitzim means two pieces of wood, so every morning there's a mitzvah for them to put two pieces of wood on the mizbeach besides the rest of the wood pile that they set up. So in other words, again, according to Rashi, the question is that they needed the pious because of those avodas, which those are important avodas, those are daytime avodas, and the Kohenim are going to be vying for those. So we needed a pious because of that. According to Rabbeinu Hananel and the other Rishonim, the question is that what are you telling me they needed a pious only because people are fighting? Adarabi, you see that they needed to add those things in order to make the avoda attractive to anyone in the first place. So that's Omer Ravashi, Shtei Takonos Havu. So Ravashi says, as a matter of fact, there were two Takonos over here. There were two stages. Me'ikra Sover Loyosu. What happened was originally the Chachamim figured nobody's going to bother showing up for Trumas Hadeshen. Again, either because we said it's a nighttime avoda, and the nighttime avoda is the Kohenim considered less important, or because it involves waking up very early in the morning and it's going to be hard for them to do that. Kiven de Chazu de Kasu, then they saw that yes, many Kohenim are coming and vying for the privilege, but also Namili de Sakana, and they're coming to Sakana, that you have this case where the person pushed the other one off the Kevesh. Takinu la Piyasa, so then they set up a pious for it, as it says in the Mishnah. The problem was, at that point, it was only that they have, that there's a pious only for Trumas Hadeshen by itself. The problem is that was counterproductive. Kiven to Takinu La Piyosa, once they set up a pious for it, Loyosu, people stopped coming altogether. Amri, because they figured to themselves, Mi Yema Demisamilon, who says we're going to win the pious? You have 100 Koyanim standing over there. Our chances of winning it are very low. Mela, when it just depended on our Zrizus, on getting up early in the morning and being the first one there, or running the foot race and winning, where you exert yourself to win, fine, then it was worthwhile to get up early because we have a high chance of winning it. We can affect the outcome. But here we're standing in a pious together with 100 other people. Here we're standing in a pious together with 100 other people. So there's no greater chance of we can't improve our chances because we're all standing in a circle here anyway, and which one is going to be picked is on the face of it random. Okay, it's Min HaShamayim, but still. So why should we even bother waking up just on the off chance that we may win the Trumas Hadeshen, one out of a couple of dozen Kohenim? So therefore they stop coming. Hodut Kinu Lahu said that Chachamim made a new Tekana, a Misha Zocha, the Trumas Hadeshen, Yiskim, the Sidur Ma'arocha, the Shnei Gzira Eitzim. Whoever wins Trumas Hadeshen also wins the right to set up the Ma'arocha and to put two logs of wood on the Mizbeach. This way, Kohenim are going to be attracted. They're going to say it's true, the chance is not very high, but after all, that's true of the other Avodas as well. The chance is not very high that we're going to win. And still, they're coming because it's a chance to do an Avoida. It's a chance to do, in this case, many Avoidas. So therefore, they're more likely to come, and therefore, it's more attractive to them. So those were the stages. And Tosfos actually says it doesn't have to mean that there were actually two stages. It could just mean once the Chachamim made a pious, they right away realized that if we don't add something else to sweeten the pot, then nobody's going to want to come. So therefore, right away on the spot there, they said, we're making a pious. We're also going to add to it who sets up the Ma'arocha and who puts the two logs of wood. Okay. Mishnah had said it was Manshein Merubin Chula. We said when there is a large number of them, then we said they run a foot race and whichever one gets to the four amas first. So what four amas are we talking about? Amar Papa Pshitali, it's obvious to me, Arba Amas de Araloi. We don't mean whoever
beats the other one into the four amos on the ground near the kevish, because Rotsin Va'olim V'kevish Tanan. Because after all, the Mishnah uses the expression that they would run up the kevish, implying that the race was not on the ground, but rather on the kevish. And Tamaisa Namilo, you also can't say that it means that they were running up only the first four amos of the kevish, because Rotsin Va'olim V'kevish Tanan, because the expression is they would run up the kevish, and you can't really run within four amos. You wouldn't call it rotsin va'olim. Also, Tosfos Yeshanim says another point. If it was the first four amos on the kevish, then fine. Whichever one picks up the foot first is going to win the race. So therefore, obviously, because it says rotsin va'olim v'kevish dan v'hoder so it says first they're running, and then it says whichever one gets ahead of the other one, implying therefore that there had to be a race before we reach the finish line. The Bene Bene Namiloi also says Rapapa, obviously we don't mean that they would just pick some arbitrary four amos in the middle of the kevish, and that would be the finish line, because the loy masayim lemilsa, because there's nothing to mark it. So the person himself is not going to know whether he needs to exert himself to reach the finish line when he doesn't know where the finish line is. So Rapapa says, Pshitali, Degavim is Ve'achtanan. So obviously there's no question that the four amos that we're talking about means the top four amos of the kevish next to the Mizbeach. However, Boy Rapapa, Arba Amos Sha'amru, what about this four amos that we're talking about? Is it Bahade Ama Yisoid Ba'amos Soidiv? Now you have like this, the kevish was on the south side of the Mizbeach. Now, on that side, there was no Yisoid, but there was still an Amos space as if there had been a Yisoid there. Further above that, there's another indent where the Mizbeach goes in another Amma on all the sides, which is the Soviv. The Kevish hung over that area. So the top of the Kevish was almost touching, the top of the Mizbeach. There was a slight separation between them. But that means, in other words, that the end of the kevish hung over that space where the yisoid would have been, and it hung over the area where the mizbeach gets indented for the soid. So now the question is, when we say the top four amos, do we mean that two of those amos are the ones where it hangs over the yisoid and the soid? So it means, when you would look at the kevish, it means the actual top four amos of it. A dumma, barma amos yisoid, the amos soid, maybe what it means is, it's actually the top six amos, because you have four amos that are the finish line, as well as another two amos where it overhangs where the yisoid would be and where the soid is. And the Gemara says, Taker, we can't be sure about that. Okay. Going on, the Mishnah says, V'imhoyu shnei en shavim, we said if two of them were tied, ha'mamuna oimer lahem hatzbiu v'chola, then the mamuna, the one in charge, and by the way, we learned in Shkolim about we said there were 15 Mamunim, 15 people in charge of different things in the Beis Mikdash. One of them was someone named Maskev ben Shmuel, who was in charge of the Piyosis. So he was in charge of having these lotteries done every day to determine which Kayin does which Avoida. So he would tell them, stick out your fingers, and we're going to start counting your fingers. So what does Hatzbiu mean? Tana, we learn in Avraisa, Hotziu Etzbeu Seicham Laminyan. It means stick out your fingers, we're going to count them. So the question is, why do we need their fingers? Why can't we just count their heads directly? So the answer is, Messiah Rabbi Yitzchak. This supports, this that we're saying that we don't do that, supports what Rabbi Yitzchak says. The Amr Rabbi Yitzchak also limits Yisrael afilu l'dvar mitzvah. You're not allowed to count Jews even for a dvar mitzvah. So even though in this case it's for a mitzvah to determine who's going to do what avodah, you're still not allowed to count them directly. And we see that because the pasuk tells us by Shaul, when Shaul is getting the army together to go to war against Ammon, who are threatening the Jewish city of Yavish Gilad, the pasuk says Vayifkidei Bevozek. He counted them. Now the simple meaning of in Bezek means the name of a place. The Gemara is going to ask that, but the Gemara is understanding that the word Bezek means broken pieces. We had at the end of Abraham, for example, Boiskin Melach, Hagabia Kevish, that they would break up and sprinkle salt on the ramp of the Mizbeach, so it's not so slippery. So Bezek means broken pieces. So in other words, what he did is, each person gave him a broken shard of earthenware, and then they counted up the shards. So you see, even though they're going for a mitzvah, they're going to get the army together and fight against the Goyim and save a Jewish city, nevertheless, we see Shaul didn't count them directly. Marsha points out, by the way, why do we have to learn from there? Why don't we learn just from the Pasuk that tells us in the Torah, it says that they have to count the Jews in the desert with Matzah Shekel. And Marsha says, okay, so maybe you could say over there, there was a special thing. It was after the Chetah Egel, they needed the Matzah Shekel as a kapara. That doesn't necessarily show that in the future you have. Therefore, the Gemara brings the Pasuk from Shaul. The problem is Maskif for Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, what are you talking about? Mimai dehai bezek lishnidim nivzaku. Who says the word bezek means broken pieces? V'doma shmodim also. Maybe it's just the name of the city. The name of the place where you counted them is called bezek. K'dichtiv vayim tzua adori bezek. As you have a pasuk in Shoftim, the actual pasuk is vayim tzua es adori bezek v'vozek. That when the Jewish people were fighting to conquer the remaining parts of Eretz Yisrael, they found King Adoni Bezek in the city of Bezek, and they captured him. So we see there's a name of a place called Bezek. So the same thing over here. Maybe it means that's where Shaul counted the people. No, rather we can learn from a different pasuk that later on, right before the war with Amalek, the pasuk tells us, Shaul gathered the people together. Vayishama literally means he made an announcement, because that's how you gather people together, is by announcing. Vayifkedim b'tloyim, and he counted them in tloyim. So what is that? So again, in tloyim, so Tosfos Yerushalmi says, again, on a pshat level, you could say, and some of the Mefoshim on the pasuk do say, that it means that there's a name or a place called tloyim, that's where we counted them. But the Gemara is understanding it as not in tloyim, but rather with tloyim. Tloyim are sheep, lambs. So it means that he told each person, take one of my sheep, and then we're going to count the sheep. So therefore, in fact, Targum Yonasan on the pasuk says over there that these were the sheep for the Korban Pesach. So according to Targum Yonasan, this war with Amalek took place around Pesach time. So everybody's giving over those sheep, and then they're counting those, and then and that way they know the number of the people. So again, we see that they're not counting the people directly; they're counting them using sheep. Even though it's for Dvar Mitzvah. There is, by the way, a bit of interesting discussion about this. I mean, on the face of it, so what good does it do if you're counting their fingers? If the finger is attached to the person, so you count the finger, then it's tantamount to counting the person. There are some of the Achronim who say that's not a big deal because if you were counting an Eva Shana Shama Tzloyaboy, a vital organ like the head, then it would be a problem. But here, when you're counting fingers, which are not a vital organ, then it's not a big deal. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, some of the Achronim say, is over here we said in the Mishnah that a person could stick out one finger or two. And a way of understanding it, we'll talk about this more tomorrow, Best Hashem, is that maybe if a person sticks out two fingers, they actually count them as two. So therefore, when you have everybody sticking out their fingers, then it's not a defined thing. It's not, by the end of it, you don't know the actual number of people who were there. All you know is the number of fingers, which is not necessarily equal to the number of people. Another consideration is also, you had the number that we're counting, we said in the Mishnah, has to be larger than the number of Kohenim who are there. If you have 100 Kohenim there, then you have to pick a number over 100. So again, you're not really counting in order to find out the number of Kohenim, you're counting in order to reach a certain point in the counting. Continuing on this topic, Amar Rav Elazar, Kol Amonei Eretz Yisrael over Balav. A person counts Jews directly, then he's over on a lav. The pasuk says the number of the Jewish people will be like the sand of the sea, which shall not be measured. So in other words, in simple meaning of the pasuk, it means that there's going to be so many, it's going to be impossible to measure them. But the Gemara's understanding, lo yimad actually constitutes a lav medivre kabbalah, a lav based on a thing in Nevi'im rather than in Chumash, fine, but still, lo yimad, you are not allowed to measure. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar over b'shnei lav, and Rav Nachman Yitzchok says actually there are two lavim involved. Shnei lo yimad v'lo yisafer, because the pasuk doesn't say lo yimad, it says v'lo yisafer, and they shall not be counted. So again, if a person measures and counts Jews, then he's over on two lavim. This is why, by the way, when we count people for a minyan, we don't count directly. We count using a pasuk such as Hashiyah Samach. The Rebbe once pointed out on it, by the way, that I mentioned this yesterday at the end of Ein Yaakov Shir, that in earlier Sfarim, in Sefer HaPardes from Rashi, it mentions that they used to use for this purpose the pasuk Vani Barov Chastacha Ova Besecha, which also has 10 words in it. But later on, in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, we find that they use the pasuk Hashiach Esamecha, so that it says, as we're getting to the end of Golos, and the darkness of Golos is intensifying, then right away, we have, as soon as 10 Jews are gathered together, right away, as a natural, almost an instinctive thing, is right away, we're going to dive into the Geula, for the pasuk such as Hashiach Esamecha, asking Hashem to save the Jewish people. Anyway, but that's the basis of that, is based on this, that you're not allowed to count Jews directly. There was, by the way, a whole interesting discussion and back and forth on this, and many different opinions on this at various times. The Israeli government conducted censuses of the people, just like all governments do nowadays. And so in America, for example, when we have the census every 10 years, no big deal. They're not counting Jews separately. They're counting the American population generally. So there's no problem participating in that. But in Eretz Yisrael, where they are counting mostly Jews, and they are trying to establish specifically how many Jews there are in the country. So there were a tremendous number of opinions on the subject. Are you allowed to participate? What are the dinim on it based on this Gemara over here? There were some of the Rabbanim at that time said that maybe you shouldn't participate based on this. Others of them found various heterodim. One of them is you don't actually write, you write on the form the name, your name and the name, your names and the names of your children. And then they tabulate it using computers. Maybe as long as they're not counting it directly by hand, then maybe there's less of an issur. Or maybe even the fact that it's written on pieces of paper, there's less of an issur. And then in various Israeli censuses, they made different changes. They made different arrangements in order to satisfy whatever opinions al pi halacha they could. For example, in one of them, they made the rule: you only have to write down the names. You don't write a total. You know, normally, on a census form, you would have, you write the names of all your family members, and at the bottom, you write a total. So here, okay, they said you don't have to write the total. They'll tabulate it using computers. All right. Continuing on this, the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, Rav Yonis and Rum." Rabbi Yonason pointed out an apparent contradiction in this pasuk that we just quoted. The pasuk is saying that the number of the Jewish people will be like the sand of the sea. Now, the sand of the sea is a huge amount, but in principle, you could count it given enough time. But then the pasuk continues, "Asher la yimad below yisafer," that it cannot be numbered and it cannot be measured and it cannot be counted. So what is it? Is the number of the Jewish people, is there going to be a finite number, or is it going to be an infinite number? The answer is, like Kasha, can this man she Yisrael oisim ritzon Hashem mokdim? One is talking about when the Jewish people are doing what Hashem wants, then their number is infinite. Can this man she oisim ritzon Hashem mokdim? The other one is when the Jewish people are not fully fulfilling what Hashem wants, then the number of the Jewish people is still going to be large, but a finite number. One thing that talks about Chassidus, Ritzon Shamakim refers to Keser, and Keser is Bli Gvul. So when the Jewish people are Osin Ritzon Shamakim, then we connect with Keser, and then therefore we're infinite. Rebbe Omer Mishum Abba Yossi Ben Bistoy. Rebbe says in the name of Abba Yossi Ben Bistoy a different explanation how to reconcile the Pesukim, like Kasha. Can be day Adam, can be day Shemayim. One is talking about human beings are not going to be able to count the Jewish people because it's such a tremendous number. The other part is going to be Bidei Shemayim, the comparison to the sand. The comparison to the sand. Hashem, after all, Hashem knows how many people there are, even if human beings find it impossible to count. So from Hashem's point of view, there's always going to be a number that we can count. Okay. Since we mentioned before about the two countings that Shaul did of his army, once before they went to war against Ammon, and once before they went to war against Amalek. So, and we said the first time they used shards of earthenware, and the second time they used sheep. So, Amar of Mihiloi bar Idi, Amar Shmuel, Kivachin Ismana Adam, Parnas Ava Tzibur, once a person is appointed as a leader over the Tzibur, like Shaul was, Miss Asher, then he becomes rich. Because we see that, Mi'ikra Ksiv by Yifkadeh Mevazeh. First, the pasuk says that he counted them using shards. So, in other words, he was poor; he couldn't afford to give them anything better to count them by. Well, it was seksiva yifkadim atloim, and later on, it says he counted them using sheep. So, we see, in other words, that he became rich and he was able to give them out sheep to be counted by. One idea is, in other words, that's when he becomes a Parnas al Tzibur. So now he has the bracha of the Tzibur. So now he gains that bracha for himself. Another point I think the Meiri says is this way, practically speaking, the Eibishter wants to make that this way he's going to be less susceptible to bribery. If he's poor, then if they offer him money, if they offer him shreichad, he's more likely to accept it. If he's rich, then he has no need of that. Okay, I think one asks the Dilma Midid who. So, who says that the sheep were shoals? Maybe the sheep belonged to the Jewish people. Bifrat, like we said before, according to Targum Yonason, that it was their korbanos pesachim. So how do you know it means that he gave them sheep and they counted by that? Maybe it just means that they themselves each supplied a sheep and they counted. The answer is, in Ken, my Rabusa de Milsa, in that case, what would be the chiddush of it? Why would we even have to mention it? In other words, why would the Pasuk have to mention at all what he counted them with? Let it just say he counted them, and we would understand the same way as the first time he counted them using shards, the same way the second time he counted them using something. Could be shards, could be something else. The fact that the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning Batloyim is to demonstrate this thing that Rabbi Hiloi said, that Rabbi Hiloi Bar Idi said, that in fact that Hashem helped and he became rich. Okay. Since we're talking about the war of Shaul against Amalek, so therefore, the Gemara digresses a little bit to talk about something involving that. The Pasuk says that when Shaul came to fight against Amalek, the Pasuk says by Yore Banochel. Literally, it means he fought in the valley. So literally, it means, in other words, he fought against Amalek in the valley. The problem with that is, Mefoshim say that we find in the Pesukim in Parshas Shlach. Where the Meraglim come back and say Amalek Yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev, that Amalek is living in Negev, which is a mountainous area, so they're living in the mountains, they're not living in the valleys. So what valley? It means Omer Mani Al Iske Nachal. So Ramani says it means that Shaul was arguing, so to speak, with Hashem over the matter of the Nachal, over the matter of the valley. What happened? The Shah Shah Amalek, or the Shah Shah Shaul, when Hashem told Shaul, Leich Be'ikisas Amalek, go and strike and destroy Amalek, Omar, then Shaul started second guessing it. He starts thinking, Ma nefesh achas omra Torah hove egla arufa. Ma doch, if you find even one dead body, the Torah tells us that you have to bring an egla arufa, and you take it down to a nachal, you take it to a valley, and you kill it over there, because you need kapara. Call on a foshes alalu alachas kam vakama, how much more so if I'm going to be killing all these people. So, in fact, Rabbi Hananel says, that's why we know that what happened, that Shaul made a mistake and he left over some of the animals from the Amalekim. So what was the verdict? In other words, he mistakenly figured, you know what? Okay, fine, we're gonna fulfill what Hashem says and we're gonna wipe out Amalek. But afterwards, surely we're gonna need a kapara. So therefore, shouldn't we keep the animals alive so afterwards we can bring them as a korban for kapara? And that was his mistake, because Hashem had told him not to. And he starts thinking, even if you're going to say the people of Amalek did Averis, the animals didn't do anything wrong, why should they have to be destroyed? And even among the people themselves, the adults may have done Averis, the kids didn't do any Averis, why should they have to be destroyed? So he's second guessing. He's fighting and arguing over this. Banochal, using the matter of the Nachal, of the Eglon Rufa, as a reason to say that it shouldn't apply, that we shouldn't have to kill all of them. That we should have Rachmanus on some of them. So we find the possibility and Rachmanus on Agag and on the animals. But our show points out we don't actually find in the possibility that he had Rachmanus on the children. So why we mention the children over here in the Gemara? But he says, you know, listen, if he had Rachmanus on Agag, then Mustama he also had Rachmanus on the children, even though it doesn't say so in the possibility. So the Gemara says Yotza Basko on the lawyer. Basko came out and said to And then it said to Shaul in the words of the Pasuk in Kehelas, Al tehi tzadik harbe, don't be such a big tzadik. In other words, the Eibishter told you what to do. Don't start second guessing and thinking you know better and that you're kinder than the Eibishter. And then later on, it was Shaul Sha'omala, Shaul Ledoyig. Later on, what happened? You have later on the story where Shaul is paranoid that David is out to get him, and he's chasing David all over Eretz Yisrael, and at one point he finds out that the Kohenim of Noiv helped David, so he orders Doeg, he tells Doeg, save after Ofgaba Kohenim, you turn around and kill all the Kohenim because they helped David, which he had no right to do that. Yotza Baskel v'Omrelai, so Baskel came out and told him with the continuation, the next Pasuk over there in Kehelas, Al Tir Shaharbe, don't be such a Rosh. In other words, this is an example of the Chacham have an expression: a person who's kind to a person who's kind to the Achzer is going to end up being an Achzori towards the people that he should be kind to. So here is an example where Shaul was too kind to Amalek and figured that he should spare some of them, and now instead he ended up being too Achzori to the Kohenim of Noiv and killing them. Shaul had a streak of Achzoris in him, which up until now he had used for the right purpose. He'd used to fight against enemies of the Jewish people, of Cholash and Yifne Yashia, that he always made them in the wrong and always defeated them. So now he's using it inappropriately against the Kohenim after Altir Shahar. In other words, you should be a tzaddik, and you should be a tzaddik, but don't be a tzaddik when it's inappropriate. And the same thing, it's appropriate to be an Achzor at times, but not at a time like this.
Did it stop?
Okay.
Did he stop?
I mean, obviously not, because he did spare those people from Amalek, and he did kill the Kohenim of Noiv. When we say a Baskel came out, it doesn't necessarily mean that he actually acted on it. It just means that a Baskel came out to warn him off of what he's doing. But, you know, people don't always listen to what a Baskel says.
Rabbi, your headset went off. You want to see if it can
go
back on?
I realize that, actually, yeah. All right, so I'll have to charge it later.
Oh.
Sorry about that. Okay. In this connection, Amar Avuna, Kama Lecholi V'Lei Margish Gavra Demore Sayer. Look how much a person that Hashem helps him out. That such a person, how confident he can be. He doesn't have to be Choli. He doesn't have to be sick with worry, V'Lei Margish, and be concerned about bad things that are going to happen when he has Hashem on his side. Because we see Shaul ba'achas, but also Shaul did only one Aveira, and he lost his kingship because of it. David b'shtayim, but also whereas David did two Aveiras, as we're going to discuss, and he didn't lose his kingship for it. So we see, in other words, that the reason is David, because David was being helped out by Hashem. Rabbeinu Hanano uses the expression that David was motzachin be'enei Hashem. The problem is, of course, many of the Mephoshim ask, I mean, Hashem plays favorites, what's going on over here? So there's many, many different explanations. One explanation that a number of the Mephoshim say is that the difference is, you look at what the Averas were that they did. Shaul's Avera involved something of the kingship. Hashem had told him, as king, to go and destroy Amalek, and he didn't do the job. So therefore, he loses his kingship for it. Whereas David, as serious as his Averas were, they were Averas that a private person might do. The one with Uriah, the one with Bathsheba, the one that, as we're going to discuss. So therefore, so he didn't lose his kingship for it. The Sefer Ikrim brings a mushal on it. Imagine that a king has two ministers, and then both of them are caught in crimes. One of them is forging documents, and the other one is committing adultery. Which one is the king going to punish more severely? The one who misused his job by forging documents, the one who committed adultery. Okay, it's bad Avera, but it has nothing to do per se with his job working for the king. So the same thing over here, David. So the same thing over here, David's job, both Shaul and David's job, is to be king. So therefore, if Shaul messed up in something involving the kingship, then it's much more serious than David's. There's many, many other explanations. The Gvura Sari says another point on it is that David, throughout his life, was always anything that happened to him, even the bad things, he's always thanking and praising Hashem and Makabel, everything that the Eidusha does, Latova and Lera, and accepting it gratefully and with Simcha. So therefore, he had special Siyata Dishmaya because of that. Therefore, like, so to speak, the Eidusha is willing to give him more of a break. Another point, Marshall makes a point, is we find by Shaul, when he was confronted with what he had done wrong, when Shmuel confronts him, he starts making excuses. I did what Hashem wants. Okay, I listened to the people a little bit and kept some of the animals alive. We wanted to bring carbonus, etc. Whereas David, as soon as he was confronted with his Aveda, right away did the Shuvah and said, Chotos. So there's all those, and then there's the Meiri has another point on it, which he says, the fact of the matter is, the kingship was destined for David, Lo Yosu Shevet Yehuda, so therefore, David, being from Yehuda, was given more of a break than Shaul, who after all is not from that, who's not from that family, he's from Shevet Binyamin, so therefore, as soon as the Eidusha had an excuse to remove him from the kingship, then he did so. Anyway, the point is, Rav Huna is saying, you see that when a person has Siyata Dishmaya, how little he has to worry, because Hashem is going to help him, Hashem is going to give him much more of a break, and allow him, so to speak, to get away with more than he would otherwise. He may get punished, he'll get punished for it, of course. Hashem doesn't, we don't control him, we should never say that Hashem is willing to overlook an Avera, but Hashem is not going to punish him necessarily with the loss of his kingship or something like that. So let's analyze that. Shol ba'achas ma'i, what the one Aveira that was saying Shol did, is ma'is da'agag, is the story when he failed to kill Agag, and then the animals of Amalek. The problem is, what about, though, you also have the fact that he killed out the city of Noiv? Doesn't that count as a second Aveira? The answer is because that ma'is da'agag, already after the war with Agag, already after the war with Amalek, then Hashem tells Shmuel, I regret that I ever appointed Shaul as king. So already then, he lost his kingship. Yes, later on, he did the Aveda with Noiv, but that, we can't say he lost his kingship because he already lost it before that. Tosfos Shonim points out that actually you do have Urdiyah, and Marsha point out, you do have Urdiyah. There was a story over there, a few prophets earlier, when Shaul was in Gilgal, and Plishtim are getting ready to attack, and he was supposed to wait 7 full days for Shmuel to come and bring Korbanos, and he got nervous, said that because his army is deserting him, and he went and brought his Korbanos, and Shmuel criticized him for that, and told him that because of that, your kingship is not going to last. But the point is, Tosfos Hashanim says, if it had been only for that, what would have happened is, fine, he would have passed away young, but his children still would have taken over the kingship. Like this, with the war with Amalek, which he failed to do the job, then not only he lost his kingship, but he lost it for all his generations to come. But the point is, by the time it came to killing the Kohanim of Noah, it was already a done deal. He really lost his kingship, so we can't say that he did two. So it's true, he did two Averis. There's a Medrash, actually, that counts that altogether Shaul did 5 Averis. There's the fact that he went to the witch over there to bring up Shmuel's spirit, a couple of others. But anyway, the point is that the one that he lost his kingship because of. Next, David B'Shtayim. What about, we said that David did 2, Ma'ininu. What are those 2? Apparently, Uriah or Dehasasa. Number one, that he had Uriah killed in battle, that the whole story with Bathsheba over there, where he wanted to cover up what he had done with Bathsheba. So he sends Uriah to the front lines of the battle and gets him killed over there. And Hasasa, where at the very end of David's life, the pasuk says that Hashem gave David the idea, put the idea in his head that he should count the Jewish people, and he went and counted them in violation of what we said before, that you're not allowed to count Jews directly. There's actually a good deal of discussion among the Mephoshim. I mean, the fact is, it was a mistake of David's, as we're saying over here, but what was David thinking? So there's a few possibilities. One is maybe David thought that Isser of counting Jews applied only in the Midbar as a one-time thing. Maybe he figured that whatever it is, different possibilities, and how exactly he did it wrong. Is it that he counted them directly? Is it that maybe even he did count them with Matzah Shekel, but it wasn't for constructive purpose? It was just because he wanted to know how many Jews there are. Whatever the case, that was an Aveda. So those are the 2 things that he did wrong and was as king and was still saying he didn't lose his kingship. So the question is, aren't there others? Well, you can name Ma'is de Bathsheba. What about within the story of Uriah, you also have the fact that he had relations with Bathsheba? Well, okay, so the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that, okay, Uriah had given her a get, al-tanai if one's a Rashi, not al-tanai if one's a Tosfos, whatever it is, so it wasn't technically an issue of Eishes Ish, but still, it was still a big chil Hashem. So why don't we count that? The answer is, hosim iporu mine. In that case, David was in fact punished for taking Bathsheba. Because you have the pasuk that afterwards Nathan Anavi comes to David and tells him a mashal about a rich man and a poor man, where the rich man steals the poor person's sheep, and David, not realizing that's a mashal, thinking it's an actual case, says that rich person deserves to be killed for being so cruel, as well as v'esakibse yishalam abatoyim, he should pay 4 times for the sheep, like it says in the Torah that a person steals somebody else's sheep and shechts it, and he pays 4 times. So he was paid 4 times over. Yeled, number one, the child that Bathsheba became pregnant from him and afterwards gave birth to, passed away. Number 2, Amnon, his oldest son Amnon was killed. And number 3, Tamar, that his daughter Tamar was raped, which actually those 2 things go together. Amnon lured her to his house, raped her, and then a couple of years later, Avshalom assassinated him. And then the 4th one is Avshalom, and the 4th one is that Avshalom rebelled against him and eventually was killed. So yes, he did get punished for the sting of Bathsheba, so we can't say, in other words, that he got away with it. So whatever. Tosfos actually asked, how do we know some of those things are not for having Uriah killed? And Tosfos explains how we see from the Psukim that it's not. Since he said, Vesakibsi, Shalom HaBatoyim, then it has to be that these 4 things were all in punishment of that. Okay, so the question is, Hosanami Porumine, Nu, and by the census also, with the Hasasa, where Hashem incited him to take a census of the Jewish people, also we see that there was a punishment. Just did by Yitzhak Hashem Dever, Ba'am in Abokavad Esmoid. Hosanami says that Hashem made a plague, Yisrael in Abokavad Ar, it was actually Lashon Hapasuk. Hashem made a plague among the Jewish people from the morning until Esmoid, until the time when the Korban Talmud is brought. The answer is awesomely paramigufe. The answer is okay, but over there the punishment wasn't on David's own goof. The Jewish people suffered from it. He himself didn't. He felt very bad about it, the pasuk says. But he himself didn't end up getting killed from that plague. Only other Jews did. B'chlal, why was that? Why did they deserve to? Ababanel on the Pesukim says, because after all, they rebelled twice against David with Avshalom and with Sheva ben Bichri, so therefore they deserve that punishment. The Medrash says actually what it was is, at that time, they weren't concerned that the Beis Mikdash hadn't been built yet. Most of the Jews figure, no big deal. We can live without a Beis Mikdash for a long time. I don't know, maybe some of them liked it, because this way you can have bummus wherever you want and bring carbonus wherever you want. So like this, Hashem brought about this story and brought about this plague. And the upshot of it was that David went to the barn of Arav Nahayagusi and boarded, and that was the place of the Beis Mikdash. So the point is, the punishment wasn't on David himself. David felt very bad about it, but the punishment wasn't on his own goof. Okay, so the question is, Hosam Nami Lo Yiporu Mikufe, Nu, and by Bathsheba also then, we're saying the punishments involved his children. His baby with Bathsheba passed away, Amnon, his oldest son was killed, etc. We don't see Lachorda that he himself was punished in his body. The answer is Loyi, as a matter of fact, yes, Yiporu Mikufe. Yes, he was punished on his own body. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, Shisha Hadashim with Sarah David, for 6 months, because of the story with Bathsheba, David was struck with Saras, or Pirshu Hemenes Sanhedrin, so the Sanhedrin had to stay away from him, because after all, when he has Saras, he can't be together with them. Then it's Stauka Hemenu Shechina, and the Shechina left him, and he didn't have Ruach HaKodesh. Dichtiv, as we find Sukkim, where David asks for these things to come back, so if he's asking for them to come back, obviously shows that he's missing them. He says in Tafetu Kufi Tes, those who fear you and those who know your mitzvahs should return to me, implying that they've gone away from him. And you have it in Kapitel Nun Aleph, which is a kapitel that he wrote after the story of Bathsheba. He says, Ashiva Lisa son Yeshecha, return to me the joy of your saving, which is the joy of having the Ruach HaKodesh. A person is can only have Ruach HaKodesh only when he's in a state of Simcha. So he's asking Hashem to restore him that Simcha and that Ruach HaKodesh. So therefore, yes, he was punished on his body. In fact, the Maharal points out, when you get down to it, it means that he lost in all three ways of a person's mitzvahs. His body was struck with tzaras. His seichel, he can't be together with the chachamim to fatif sich in understanding Torah. And he lost his ruach hakodesh, which has to do with his neshama. So he's punished in all three aspects of his mitzvahs. So yes, he was actually punished on his body. But Tosfos goes on to say that maybe what it, in that case then doesn't mean he was punished more than four times, and how do we know that Taras wasn't because he had gotten Uriah killed? So Tosfos discusses and says that maybe what it is the story of Amnon and Tamar all count as one, because after all, one is a continuation of the other, and then he goes through explaining how you can recount these things to come up with four, and also maybe the fact that he was healed from Taras doesn't really count. So, on the other hand, Maharsha says that no, what it is, the fact is, there was the stealing of the sheep, so to speak, and then there's the shechting of it, so to speak. In other words, in the Nimshol, there's the taking of Bathsheba, and then there's marrying her. So therefore, each one deserved its own punishment. So one got Saras, and the other one got the four things that happened with his children. Okay, so the point is, in other words, so we see there were two Averis that David did where we don't find that he personally got a punishment for. One of them is that he got Uriah killed. The other one is that he counted the Jewish people. So therefore, so we see what Rav Huna is saying, that the person who's helped by Hashem is able, that Hashem helps him, and he doesn't suffer as severe consequences as somebody who doesn't, like Shaul, who did only one Avera and then lost his kingship because of it. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with something else that the Gemara is going to ask. That on the face of it, we find something else that David did wrong, and why don't we count that? So we'll discuss that tomorrow, and then we'll continue talking about Shaul versus David, Best Hashem.
Okay. Have a wonderful day.